Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport on a day when we have a new Grand Slam champion crowned. We knew we were going to get one of those anyway, because they were both debutants in a Grand Slam final, Madison Keys and Sloane Stephens. But it is Sloane Stephens who has won the title here. Myself, David Law, alongside Simon Briggs of The Telegraph, we've witnessed this final. Not a classic, I think it's fair to say, Simon. 6-3, 6-love. That's to take nothing away from Sloane Stephens, who looked as though on the court, as though she'd been doing this all her life. But afterwards, she was, I put it endearingly, clueless about what you do, because she'd never lifted a trophy on a grand scale like that before. But heck of a performance from her. Let's start with that.
Yeah, I was thinking, if we say it was a rubbish final, then we might be accused of, being gender biased. But actually, we've had two rubbish finals in slams in a row, haven't we? It wasn't so different in its tone from Federer versus Cilic at Wimbledon. It was just so one-sided. And the thing was that Keys was very, very nervous, and presumably she probably wasn't totally mobile.
She had her left thigh heavily strapped, didn't she? And she did, if you remember, in the semi-final, she pulled up, didn't she? I think 6-1, 4-1 up in that semi. She pulled up and went off the court, had it strapped and came back on. She said it was sort of a precaution because she could feel it going. And, yeah, I mean, she's had problems like that before. So I would say she probably wasn't 100%, but I don't think that was the only story.
Yeah, I think she freaked out big style. I mean... Chris Evert, I was listening to her on ESPN, I think it was Chris Evert, who said that, you know, it's in some ways it's easier for a player who is a percentages player to go into a massive match like that than somebody who is a power hitter and a killer of the ball, just because, you know, the rhythm of just popping the ball back, which is what all Sloane did with the first few games, is easier to reproduce under that kind of pressure. And Sloane then did grow into the match and began to play some fine tennis. But it was maybe disappointing that she didn't have a chance to measure herself against somebody else who was, you know, playing on a level that could compete with her. But obviously, you know, bagel set, second set. I think that the first set was 6-3 because Sloane was just fine and Madison was awful. And then 6-love, second set, because Madison was still pretty awful, but Sloane was now really playing very, very well as well. So
clever match player, isn't she? She knows how to put the ball in difficult positions for power opponents like Keys. I saw them play a few, I think maybe a year ago, just over a year ago, and Stephens produced a similar kind of performance. Just sort of carved Keys up, you know, put it in horrible places, and she ended up beating herself. But Stephens, I thought that was just a masterclass, really, for a first time finalist to produce a composed performance like that.
It felt like she was really in the zone, didn't she? I think two unforced errors in the first set. She tried to do a bit more second set, but perhaps because she just feeling so good and everything she tried pretty much came off. And the volleying was particularly sweet, wasn't it? I think she didn't lose a point at the net. Every time the ball went to her, she found exactly the right position to kind of the angle to just move it away out of Madison's reach. And it's not as if I remember her being a particularly net-rushing player, so I think she must just have been having one of those days.
Yeah, I think she felt it well off the racket from the very first ball. Keys, I mean, look, it was 2-2. It wasn't like she just ran away with it from the very start, but she pulled away. And it was quite interesting. I wasn't commentating on the match. I was out in the crowd to get little inserts into the Five Live coverage. And it was noticeable that the atmosphere was a little strange because it's two Americans, two young Americans who are making their breakthrough. And I interviewed a couple of the fans, and that one was supporting Keys, one was supporting Stevens, but the general gist was, we don't really mind who wins, you know. We just feel absolutely delighted that there's two Americans. But there wasn't an edge in the crowd at all. It was just, yeah, it was jolly, really. But that in itself is not really what you expect in a Grand Slam final. You expect one of the players to really have the support.
Yeah, I guess the last two women's finals have been thrilling, haven't they? At the Slams. And now this tournament just has a slight sense that it could drain away to a slightly underwhelming conclusion, because there's a possibility that we could see something similar happening tomorrow in the men's final. As a possibility, I wouldn't imagine that if that happens, it'll be Rafa who loses. Let's put it like that.
No. The other thing is, I think, that contributes to the atmosphere is that neither Keys or Stevens are... Certainly Stevens isn't a demonstrative player in celebration of shots the way that Nadal is. I mean, not many people are, frankly. And also, Kevin Anderson's suddenly become the elongated South African version of Nadal with his celebrations as well. So I think that probably makes it a little more difficult sometimes for a crowd to really get going with a player who is focused and so forth. But there was real warmth towards Stevens as a champion at the end, I felt, from the crowd. And when the two players hugged at the net, that was one of the most notable moments of affection between two players in a final that I think I've ever seen. It was the longest hug I've ever seen at a net.
Yeah, I think, and there was a strong swell of comment on Twitter, and everyone said, well, that was the best moment of the match.
I think it was.
Yeah, and that's what everyone will remember from this. And there was a lot of emotion. I mean, and I must say that, while the tennis might not have been top level, the interviews were great, weren't they? And the way that they can express so much warmth for each other, and they put it so beautifully. And then there was a nice little bit of interplay with the Czech, wasn't there? As Sloane Stephens did seem to be genuinely shocked to be getting a check for more than $3.5 million. And I'm not surprised. I actually was shocked the other day. When I looked it up, I was like, wow. I mean, I sort of feel like when I started doing this about 7 years ago, we were looking at sort of £1 million.
Well, it's certainly basically doubled over the last decade. It is an extraordinary sum of money. And Keys will get effectively half that, you know. So she's not exactly walking away with a pittance. Just in terms of going forward for Stevens and Keys, I mean, could you imagine this being a final that we're talking about at other Grand Slams in years to come? Do you think that this could be a rivalry?
Yeah, I do, but at the same time, you've got to say that it's been a very unpredictable year on the women's tour again. We've had four different Slam champions. I think it's been a pretty good year on the women's tour. I mean, I think there have been years when there has, you know, there have been questions about what the entertainment quality has been like. I think overall, there have been some excellent matches, and it's definitely punched on an equal quality with the men's game this year. If not been better overall in the Slams. So, you know, we've had Ostapenko come out of nowhere. We've had Muguruza make the move that suggests that she might become a regular rankings leader. But, I mean...
Fascinating, actually. I've quite enjoyed that element to this year. These new players coming, in some ways, from left field. I mean, let's be honest. What was it, 11 months ago, Sloane Stephens was 900 and something in the world?
Yeah, I mean, that's a slightly... It's good value, that whole angle. You know, we all knew...
It's injury-based, don't
it? Yeah, we all knew from an early date that she was capable of doing something really special. What's interesting, perhaps, is that there is perhaps this trend in tennis at the moment that long breaks have been beneficial for a lot of players, men's and women's. It's a question of... not only getting your body right, getting rid of those really chronic niggles, but also seeing the world outside, perhaps. And she said just on the ESPN Now that she was sort of just enjoying life so much. And she's come back looking less stressed on the court and very sort of living in the moment, isn't she? That was the difference between them today. Madison came out clearly thinking about what was on the line there, and Sloan just seemed to be going with it, didn't she?
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. It, in terms of the some players have an appeal for column inches, etc. Stevens has got something, hasn't she? I mean, not just being an excellent tennis player. She's quirky. She's quite good fun. I mean, not all the time. I think sometimes she can go into automated mode in one interview after another. I was watching them out here yesterday in preview of the final, which I can kind of understand. Sometimes they don't want to bother. But she's got a bit of a sense of humour, and I suspect that will appeal.
She certainly had a lot of questions. I was looking last night at the transcript of Rafa's post-match interview after his semi-final. He was asked 6 questions, of which not a single one was about Anderson. And then I looked at the... it was very late. I mean, to defend my brethren, we were kind of pretty exhausted by this stage. It was getting towards the small hours. But anyway, the Sloane-Stevens interview after the semi-finals, there must have been 30 questions. You know, there is definitely an X factor here. The American writers have been loving her whole story. They've been loving Madison's too, but I think out of the two of them, yes, I think maybe Sloane is the one with the X factor. I mean, she's got an interesting sporting pedigree. Her father was a star running back in the NFL. And, on the TV, it was funny, Cliff Drysdale just kept on saying, look at her feet, look at her feet. Because she has a, I don't know, I think we spoken about the elasticity of a Federer. You know, and a Halep, and Sloane Stevens has that, those kind of footballer's legs, doesn't she? She just glides. You don't seem to be watching somebody in a hurry, and then suddenly she's at the ball, she's ahead of the ball, she's in position, and today she was pushing it up the line for a winner.
Also, she's sort of had that full start, hasn't she, of reaching a semi-final at the Australian Open 4 years ago, beating Serena, everybody saying this is the next big thing, and then, frankly, it just not happening for about 3 years. And really, her whole commitment to the game being quite significantly questioned. Now, yeah, she's delivered. Absolutely delivered as much as you can. And it's a great story for her. I do think it was a disappointing final, but... well, what can you do? It's over now. We've got the men's final tomorrow. Before we get on to that, we've had a quite astonishing wheelchair singles semi-final between Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid of Scotland, in which both players had multiple match points. It was 3 hours and 2 minutes long, and I don't quite know how, but Alfie Hewitt managed to win. So he's into the final of the wheelchair singles. The two of them are also in the final of the wheelchair doubles as a team. So a couple of great stories that have been going on earlier today. We've also had Jamie Murray and Martina Hingis winning the mixed doubles, Simon Briggs. And, there used to be a saying, wasn't there, that what's the best doubles team in the world? John McEnroe and anybody. and I'm not trying to do Jamie Murray a disservice at all, because he's an excellent doubles player. But there is the feeling that Martina Hingis is the best doubles player on the planet.
Yeah, I think she...
either gender, any age...
She probably could come and ask you to play mixed doubles and you'd have a shot, wouldn't you?
Well, let's be realistic, Sam.
I mean, the match point was an absolute belter, because they got into a mess. Having won the first set 6-1, Murray and Hingis, they got into a mess. Jamie lost his serve twice in a row, second set, managed to lose it. It was 8-all at one point, I think, in the Champions tie break. We're having to move backwards here because Sloane Stevens is holding the cup about 10 metres away from us.
And we're in the shot, yeah, apparently. So Sloane Stevens is shooing us out of the way. So, Briggs, that's a bit of a turn-up for the tennis podcast, isn't it? But there we are. That's what she's doing. She's standing next to Justin Gimelstob, showing off her very silvery, shiny trophy. Yeah, and we've been told to get lost, basically.
I think she's earned shoeing rights.
Yes, I think so. So Jamie Murray and Martina Hingis, it was close, wasn't it?
So we're at 8-all, and then I think we get a 9-8, and then the point was, it's match point. And Michael Venus, is serving to Hingis, and backhand return up the line, followed by another backhand up the line. It was just irresistible. So this was basically a singles point between Michael Venus and Martina Hingis, and she dominated him. And that's how good she is.
She's a wonderful player to watch. I mean, I think she's too lightweight, and obviously she's 36 years of age now, so she'd be limited in what she could do in singles, I'm sure, because of movement, etc. But still one of the great players to watch, and it's cool that she's still out there playing doubles, and good for Jamie Murray. How many is that he won now? It's about five slams, isn't it? Mixed and doubles?
Five slams, and then he entered the debate about remuneration. We're going back to the 3.65, is it 3.65 or 3.7 million for Sloan? So they got 150,000 between the two of them, I think.
Crikey, that is an extraordinary difference, isn't it? I mean, they did sit them on pretty early in the day. It was a good crowd out there, but that does seem very low, doesn't it?
Well, still more than they got at Wimbledon, because they got £100,000 between the two of them at Wimbledon. I guess part of that's due to the exchange rate and Brexit. But there's still a case to be made that mixed doubles is a little bit on the low side. Because basically you get as much money for not winning a singles match here, almost, as you do for winning the mixed doubles.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the argument all tournaments would make is who's buying a ticket and paying broadcast rights for the mixed doubles, and the answer is probably no, not many. But that having been said, people love doubles, don't they? When they come to a slam and the mixed doubles, they do watch. I mean, and if you get a British player doing well, say at Wimbledon, BBC TV, BBC Radio, we broadcast it.
Well, I've got a theory on this, which is if you think about a 100-meter sprint and then a 4x100 relay, which is the more fun to watch?
4x100.
Right. And just the same, a doubles match is usually more fun to watch than a singles match. But who remembers the 4x100 team that wins?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Because...
star quality.
Well, no, I think it's the simplicity of you are the best 100-meter runner in the world just beats the complexity of a team in a running race. And in the same way... finding out who is the best tennis player in the world has a grip, a simplicity, and a symbolism which can't be equated on the tennis court in doubles. But if you think about it, the actual entertainment, the raw entertainment, is greater in doubles.
Simon Briggs of The Telegraph with the theories here on the Tennis Podcast. I like that. And I think you bang on. Now, men's final tomorrow. Kevin Anderson against Rafael Nadal. We spoke about it a little yesterday. We've had Kevin Anderson in to do his pre-tournament press conference today. It's quite interesting, isn't it? You know, it's all new to him and to Sloane Stephens to do this kind of thing. You know, day off, you would think, before the final. But no, he's got to come in and talk to everybody. And his wife produced this photo of Nadal and Kevin Anderson, who are both the same age, from when they were, 12 years old, 14, something like that. Real little kids standing there having played a final together. They've gone on obviously very different paths, but it's quite cool, really, to find them in a final together like this.
Well, I mean, he's been a much slower developer, of course. One of them has gone to one extreme of being a Grand Slam champion at 19. The other one went to university, which is generally seen as the plan B for guys who aren't going to make it big. And a great advert for that slower route. I mean, as with Sloane's whole time away from the game, it goes to show that sometimes it's better to get a broader view of life for some people. If you're not a sort of a meteor, you don't see too many people. Not even Denis Shapovalov was probably going to win a slam at 19.
Really, Nadal is set apart. Him and Becker and Chang. You know, there's not many of them, certainly on the men's side. So, could you imagine this being a better match than what we've witnessed today? Do you think it'll be closer? Do you think that Anderson will make this competitive?
I'm pretty unclear in my mind what's going to happen, but I think there's a significant chance it might be similar.
Well, he's 4-0 in head-to-heads, is Nadal against Anderson, but this is the new Anderson. This is the Anderson who fist-pumps every single time he wins a point. So we'll see whether that makes any difference whatsoever. Simon, lovely to have you with us on the Tennis Podcast, as always.
Yeah, it's been fun. I am beginning to feel the pace. I feel like there's been a relay race itself. And I'm ready to hand the baton over.
It is interesting, isn't it, that this particular Grand Slam, I mean, yeah, we all do. I mean, Catherine Whittaker, you may be wondering where she is today. She's not very well, unfortunately. Somehow she's managing to carry out her TV duties for Eurosport, just about. But yeah, she's not very well. So send her your best wishes. She sends her apologies for not being on the show today and yesterday. We'll try and see if she can come on tomorrow. But if not, anyway, she certainly is thinking of all of you. Simon and I are just holding the ship afloat and sort of propping up against a wall.
There's definitely a bit of water coming in, I think.
We are actually now leaning against a wall, just trying to stay upright, because it has been quite a tiring week. A good fun week, though. A fortnight, in fact. And we have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. Go and read Simon's articles. Watch the final on Eurosport tomorrow. It'll be live coverage starting at 8:30 p.m. UK time. I'll also be on BBC Radio 5 Live. We'll have live coverage too. We'll then have a tennis podcast after play. Thanks for your company. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.